Amen. Well, of course, we're aware that the Martins spent good part of this last summer in Mexico. A lot of things going on. Bruce gave us a little thumbnail explanation a few weeks back when they got in, but asked him to give us a little more, description and information and about all that God's doing there, and I'm sure he has plenty. And then he's also going to share the Word of God for us. So you pray for Brother Bruce as he comes tonight.
Thank you, Pastor. Well, good evening, everyone. It is a pleasure and a joy once again to be here and share with you today what the Lord has been doing. Things in Mexico have been developing in, as far as my ministry, in an area that didn't really plan it. And a lot of these things you don't really plan. God just kind of opens the doors and you ask Him, well, which door shall we go through and things like that. Since we left Honduras, and that's been almost 8 years now, since we left Honduras, we've been doing a lot of traveling to visit a lot of countries, and especially all throughout Latin America. And we've seen that get pretty heavy at least 2-3 years ago. But these last 2 years, it seems like the concentration has gone more and more toward Mexico. Several reasons for that. One is my father is not able to travel there anymore. Health-wise, he's getting to the point where he can't do hardly anything. And the things that he was doing, so to speak, I've had to take over. And his last trip that he made, and it was a trip that he really couldn't handle it hardly. It was rough for him. He was only in the country, I think, for 5 or 6 days. Was June of 2011, a year ago. And this year he was planning on several of them. He canceled them because he felt like he was not capable. And every time he's had to do that, guess what happens? It falls more on me more and more. And so that's what's been happening. And don't mind it. That's what the Lord wants. I'll be glad to do it. And we're seeing a lot of new things happening. And this summer was especially true. Now, we've had several from our church that have been down with us this summer. Brother John Davison was there for a little over a week, and he already gave you a report of his trip. April Wilson was with us for a whole month. And Proby made 2 trips while I was down there. I was down there a total of 2.5 months, and I did not come back at all. It was a time that I stayed there the whole time. I drove a vehicle down there. Everyone's always concerned when I drive down there. But I needed to have something while I was there. I needed to have some type of transportation. And so that's why I did that, and it did well. I appreciate Brother C.R. He does so much help on me on those areas. And before I left, we had to rebuild the differential and the entire rear end of that Ford Explorer before I went. And he handled all that for me, and I'm so grateful that he did. And he does all those things for us. And a lot of you don't realize how much Brother C.R. helps us missionaries when we have needs, especially in our vehicles and things like that. But he was very, very helpful. So when I first arrived there, as I went down, I had to stop halfway down, almost to Mexico City, and spend a day with one of the Cuban pastors. One of the men that I work with in Cuba is planning on marrying a young lady from Mexico in the city of Querétaro, which is about 2.5 hours north of Mexico City. And he had gone down. In fact, when I left Cuba in May, he and I flew out together. And we did that so I could help him along, get him situated and everything. Then when he got to Mexico City, they met him there. They took him on up to Querétaro, and I came on back to the States. And he'd already been down there. I'd seen him another time, another trip I'd made, but it was toward the end of his stay. And so I decided to go there to Querétaro and meet his fiance, meet the family, and spend a day or so there and kind of encourage them, find out what their plans were. And so it was a good time with him there that one day. And then I drove all the way down into Chiapas. The Chiapas is on the southern border, on the border with Guatemala. That's where most of our ministry is. It's 2 different areas mainly, but mainly in the state of Chiapas. And I arrived there just in time to start looking for an apartment. The place I stayed a year ago was not available, so I had to look. But within a day or so, I found one. And it was not as nice as the one a year ago, but it was adequate. It was secure. And I think that Provy and April did enjoy it, even though April had to sleep in a hallway rather than her own bedroom the whole time. And to get to the bathroom, she had to go through our bedroom. So, but that was all there was to that. That's just normal. At least it was a nice place, and we were able to stay there then. Most of the time that I was there this summer in the state of Chiapas was to go to churches and visit. A lot of the churches have been asking for visits. Now, I want you to understand, we have almost 200 different congregations in Chiapas that were started through my father's ministry. That's hard for a lot of people to get their mind around. 200 is a lot. And a lot of them want the missionary to visit once in a while. And some of them have not had a missionary ever. They've been started completely by the people down there. They've never. Some of them have not had a missionary for 10 or 12 years or more. And I went to a lot of churches that I've never been before. Now, my father has been there, and others maybe, but I had never visited some of these congregations. So it was important. And I tried to spread it out over that time. I would limit myself just to one day in each place. And when I would go, they would say, "We want you to preach a lot." Well, I limited myself to 3 a day. I finally told them, I says, 3 is all I can handle. They wanted sometimes 4 and 5 messages a day. But when you're doing it every day, day after day after day, it does get to you after a while. So that was one of the areas that we were dealing with. Now, let me show you some of the churches that we're talking about. This is the church in Chanal. His name is Chanal. This is an area where there was a lot of problems. You can go ahead and turn this one off if you want to. It doesn't matter, Brother Ronnie. In Chanal, an area that had a lot of guerrilla activity about 8 or 9 years ago when they had the uprising. It's one of the stronger churches. They have a really nice building, a real strong congregation there. You can see them getting ready for it. This is the inside. This is what it looks inside. You can see it's a pretty big congregation. I was in a lot of church services where we'd have 300 to 400 people sometimes. More than metropolitan. Brother Turner, I'm sorry, but down there I got a bigger congregation than you do. And praise the Lord for that. And you can see what they do is they segregate men on one side, ladies on the other side. These are Indian tribes, and when I preach, I have to have a translator. And they translate into the Indian dialect of that area. We're working in 3 different Indian dialects, and a lot of the ladies especially, and I'll show you some pictures further on, are still using their traditional dress. Now, usually at the front are the preachers. And that's what you can see on this first 2 rows. Those are all the preachers. And they kind of congregate together. That's just normal with preachers. Preachers seem to stay together in that area. And most of my time, really, is spent in working with them. I was in 2 conferences in Chiapas. One where we have a general conference, where we have a campground. And I believe there were 80 to 90 preachers there with about 65 different churches represented at that conference, which was a 3-day conference that I preached. And then every 6 months I have an advanced class. And that's one where we don't have any translators. And I teach in Spanish. And I go for about 4 to 5 days every day, 8 hours a day. And they come in for that class. And I do this every 6 months. This year I had the blessing of having a man from Honduras, one of the preachers in Honduras that I worked with the 17 years that I was there. He came in and spent about 2.5 weeks with me, and he helped me with one of those classes. So it was a lot of help, and we taught a class on the cults. Now, at this place here in Chanal, one of the highlights of the trip was the man that you see on the front row on the far left in the light blue shirt sitting up against the wall, Brother Francisco. He was really excited. He was as proud as a peacock, because he had a new group of people that he just won to the Lord. Now, he's a bilingual man. He speaks 2 languages. And he had this group that you see right here. This is from a new tribe. They're called the Toholovales. Now, years ago, we tried to start a ministry among them, but because of the guerrilla activity and other problems, they got kicked out of their tribe, and the people that were that had made profession of faith just kind of fell by the wayside, and the congregation was not able to be built. But this is a new group. And Brother Francisco is now on the right, there on the far right in the blue shirt. This was his group, and he was so proud to before this whole group of people to bring them and show them off. I think there were 3 families here, and we were excited to see that a new tribe is being opened up. That's historical, folks. When you begin to see a new tribe that the gospel is going in, that's what's happening. They speak a totally different language. The women wear a different dress. Now, it might not seem like that to you. They speak a totally different language. In fact, here I have a video of Brother Francisco at another place, and the man that is the leader of those Toholovales giving an explanation of what they're trying to do. If you'll start that video for me, I'd appreciate it.
Jak kami pohon juri de polen maka bete opege ha ya samo kidin samo kodan de kapati ta aru samo de stole kon ta yodi hermano sto ke ba yo ta ko ai ha ba yo ha bin de de municipio margarita jak kami shor man ga ha ko ta ni ko ban yo samo de yudi na sto ka ban de yo ma margarita
I appreciate it. Go to the next one. What they were doing basically was he was speaking in Tojolabal, and Brother Francisco was translating into Tzeltal among the congregation. I didn't know what was going on. I can kind of understand a little bit of Tzeltal, but I didn't even know what was going on there. It's not even Spanish that they were talking. But you have to understand, in Mexico there's over 100 different tribes, so what we're seeing there was really special and amazing. Another thing that I was able to see, this church in Chanal, after we finished our meeting for that day, one of the things they want to do is have the Lord's table, because their pastor is not ordained. So they have Brother Esteban, another man, come in to help them. And so that's what they're doing here, is they're getting ready for the Lord's table and having that experience. Then another thing that we did was youth camp. We had in the city of San Cristóbal Las Casas a youth camp. I think John was there for that part, and also April. And this is one of the singing groups that we had there. And the youth got together and did their own singing. You'll see a variety among all of our congregations. The music, I have to say, is an afterthought, and it's not their fault. It's us missionaries' fault, because my father and I don't know what we're doing as far as music, and so we're always saying, "Lord, please help." And what we've really been surprised is how the Lord has, despite our lack of help and lack of able to do anything for them, they develop some of their own musical talent. And there's some people that really have a lot of talent, but they're all self-taught. And one of the goals that we would like to have in the future, sometimes as we start our schools there and everything, is to have someone go there once in a while and help them with some of the musical training and stuff like that. But even despite that, it's really a blessing to see how the Lord is using them and doing that. I think, like I said, just at this conference, if I remember right, was there about a dozen? If I remember right, how many were there? Young people accepted the Lord. I think through my entire 2 months, if I remember right, there were 60 total professions of faith throughout all the places I was at. And practically all of them, I would say 95% of them, were young people. So it was really encouraging to see that. Plus, I saw a lot of the young men surrender to ministry to become preachers and pastors. So I was really encouraged, especially at this conference. I saw that quite a bit. Now, one of the things that you have to learn to do when you're traveling with me is learn to live with the people. That means you eat what they eat, do everything they do. Now, this was in a home in the city, in San Cristóbal Las Casas, with a Fausto and his wife. And this was a good meal, right, Peruvian April? This was one of the good ones. I think it was chicken soup, and you have a lot of chicken soup, a lot of soups. But just about everything they cook there is in a soup form. And we had shown up just to say hi that morning, and they said, "Oh, no, you've got to sit down and eat breakfast with us." Well, we were about ready to go on an 8-hour car ride that morning, so we decided to let them do it. I kind of knew that was going to happen anyway, but they always insist on providing us food. So this is a good time. We're sitting around the table. And look, this is important. For us, the relationships that we have with the people there are the most precious things that we have. And the relationships I have there are with the preachers. Now, Brother Fausto here, and I'll have a few more pictures of him as we go along, is a retired school teacher. In fact, he was a principal of a public school. But now that he's retired, he's dedicated himself to serving the Lord. He doesn't preach, but he's a helper to preachers. In fact, when my father gets there, he's the one who uses his car to take my father around wherever he wants to go. And while I'm gone, anything that we have, like small things we've purchased that we don't want to bring back up to the States, that I'll need when I'm back down there again, he keeps them in storage for me. And he's always the helper for me. And he helped us a lot when the team that we had from Oak Harbor came down. Now, we had this team come down from Bible Baptist Church in Oak Harbor. Brother Robert Sargent was the pastor. The pastor did not come. In fact, they sent two different teams, an adult team to Chiapas and a youth group to Central Mexico. The first team that arrived there was the one in Chiapas. And it was a group of, I think, nine or ten, I can't remember exactly. And among them was Brother Chris Majors. Now, Brother Chris has been here in our church about 4 or 5 months ago, if you remember. He's the one that's starting a new ministry there in Washington State. and he made a presentation here and everything. There you see him. And what he's doing is preaching. And we have what we call a triple header. What we're doing there is, he is preaching in English. I'm translating from English to Spanish. I'm in the middle. And over there on the right is Brother Esteban, and he's translating from Spanish to the Indian dialect. So you've got to hear a message three times. It takes a while to get through a message when you do like we do something like that. But that's just part of it. You learn to work with it. Brother Chris did a really good job. It was really enjoyable to hear him. And this is a lot of places where we go. This is what the church services are like. See those benches? They're just pieces of board across another board. No backs to them. Nothing like that. And the services last sometimes 2 hours or longer. Now, you think you've got it bad here? You have no idea. You have no idea what it's like. Those bunches are... What you do, there's some tricks I've already learned. Get one against the wall. So you can lean up against the wall. There's a few other little tricks like that. Although most of the time, it doesn't matter to me because I'm always up front preaching anyway. So it doesn't affect me as much. But I know that this group that we had here... And then a lot of times, it depends on where we're at, what situation it is. Sometimes we'll put those boards together because they're just loose there. And we make beds out of them, and that's what we sleep on at night. Now, a lot of you think, camping is a good adventure. Going camping, that's a vacation. Folks, for me, camping is not a vacation. I spend so much time in sleeping bags when I'm on these trips that when I get back here, that's the last thing I want to do is go sleep in a sleeping bag. I've worn out more sleeping bags than you realize. And I sleep on these hard benches, and it's not comfortable, I guarantee you. And then, of course, there's the food. And now everyone talks about how the food is and everything. But I'll have to say one thing. Compared to many years ago, it has really improved. And they're really trying. And they're really trying to give us the best. The problem is they don't always know what they're doing sometimes. Now, sometimes it can be something like this. And you see them here, the men are cutting up some meat and stuff. They're getting to the point now where they're getting wealthier. They're able to do more. When I first started arriving, you never hardly ever saw meat. And then it was chickens. And I know that after we'd have a conference, the chicken population was decimated in the villages that I visited. But now, and then they went to hogs. Now it's beef. I'm not joking. I would go into a lot of these towns. We have a day of conferences. Every place, practically every town we go to, you know what the church would do? They'd buy a steer or a cow and kill it, and that was what they would feed everybody with. I got tired of beef after a while, in fact. I thought I was looking forward to some chicken or even some eggs. But that's what they're working on here. And then, of course, they got the sauces. And other things like that. But everything is boiled. And it's boiled with cabbage. And if you don't like cabbage, you have no hope. I didn't zoom in on this, but if you see the bowls there, it's like a soup, and it's got some vegetables in it, but the biggest vegetable they use the most is cabbage, and then the meat. And you have to understand, because of their background, and because of the resources they've had, they're used to trying to get as much as they can with what they have. And when you are limited, when you have very little meat and things like that, what you do is, to get the most nutrition out of it, you boil it. If you cook it over a charcoal fire, a lot of the fat is going to be burned away. You're wasting it, in their mind. So that you don't lose any of the nutrients, when you boil it, all the fat, everything stays right there. And that's why they do that. And that's you find this pretty much all over the world. This is very common all over the world. And so after a while, those of us that are used to the better ways of eating food, well, it gets frustrating to us. Now, you see the cups of coffee there. And, of course, in those white packages, that's tortillas. And they eat a lot of tortillas. Now, they got them there because they're getting them hot. Now, a lot of places, the ladies make them handmade. But it's getting more and more where they've got machines now to make them. They'll go into town and get them and stuff. Things are changing in that area, but everyone considers the handmade ones to be the best. That's the way to really get it. And if you're really getting treated the best, that's what's happening. Nowadays, just about everywhere we go to, they give us spoons or forks or something like that. That's also a luxury. I can remember 15 years ago getting a spoon. It was only for me, the missionary, that had the spoon or fork. Everyone else, they used the tortillas to eat with. In fact, a lot of them still do that. In fact, that's because for my children, eating with a tortilla, that's the ultimate adventure. They love it. And you learn to do it. You can even eat soup with a tortilla, believe it or not. This is the sauce. This is in one place, I believe. I can't remember where this was at. It's like miso or something. I think this is like a mole sauce they're putting together for the chicken. And that's a whole big bucket of it. It's a lot of sauce. We've got a big group there. And then there's the infamous shrimp. Now, this was such a situation that I've never had before. This was a new experience even for me. We got up on a Sunday morning, and they said, "Well, have breakfast," and this is what they served us for breakfast. The only problem is they had never eaten shrimp themselves. They don't know what to do with it. So what did they do? They boiled it and made a soup of it. But apparently it wasn't fresh because it was really brown. And, you know, I have a policy that we try to eat everything they give us. They sacrifice a lot. I'm sure this was very expensive. But there's one thing. Shrimp can be very dangerous. And you can get really sick for it from it. And I says, "Guys, this is one time I'm going to tell you not to eat it." Because it can. In fact, who was it that asked me? If you can see, let me see if I can point it out to you here. There we go. See the little black things right there? Someone thought they were peppercorns. They're not peppercorns. You know what they are, don't you? They're the eyes. It's the whole shrimp. Nothing taken away at all. That's all part of it. You learn to do it. But then also we also had the wonderful, not just the food, but also getting to know them. Here you can see Provy. Notice what she's got on. The ladies, I think on two different occasions, brought to my wife a typical Indian dress that these ladies wear. Now, this is something they wear all the time. This is not that unusual. This is something they always wear, and it's not that cheap. What you see on all those colors are embroidered. It takes many, many hours to put together one of these. And what you see there is and this is over the years, we have, I don't know, probably how many you think you've received, about four or five of these total. And we really feel, it's an expression that they have to us of accepting us and appreciation. And really they want to say, "We want you to be one of us." And for us, this is a really high honor. I've received some of the men's costumes, and maybe we've done it a few times before. I don't know if you remember here, those who've been here for a while. In October, when we have our missions time, there's been a few times when I've worn the costume. I think Provy has also. So I guess we got to. It's been a while, so I guess it's time to show it to you again, so you know what it's like and understand. But this is for us a really joy. In fact, I think this group, not only did they have something for my wife, but for the other ladies too. I think they had a gift for them, a special native dress that they had there. Transportation is always a problem. Here you can see some of the men from Oak Harbor, and that's the way they had to ride, in the back of a pickup. I had my Explorer, we had this pickup, and we had another Explorer, and it was kind of a tight. All the roads are mountain roads, some of them are gravel. We had Brother, I'll show a picture of him here in just a minute. Yeah, there he is, Brother Geist. Here we're doing a translation. He's on the right, I'm translating for him, and then Brother Esteban there on the left. He's the assistant pastor. He was just ordained earlier this year, but he's the assistant pastor there at Bible Baptist in Oak Harbor. And he's also one of the leaders, one of the men that the staff members of the church. Well, he made a statement about vehicles. At the end of the trip, we got together and we're sitting down and asking about certain things. And I says, "What did you learn on the trip?" And what he said was really interesting. He said, "As the church chair treasurer," he said, "I am constantly cutting checks for missionaries for vehicles, for transportation expenses." He says, "I had a very hard time, and it bugged me. Why are these missionaries always needing so many vehicles? And why do they have to, it seems like every time I turn around, they need another one." He says, "Well, now I understand," he said. He said, "These roads are so bad, and it tears them up so fast." He says, "I can understand now." And let me tell you, as a missionary, when I'm telling some younger men coming along, and they're making up their budget and their plans for what they're going to be doing, I said, allow a lot more for transportation than you expect. Because gasoline can be very expensive. Parts, even the vehicle itself, could be twice what you pay for it here. You're buying a used vehicle, for instance, in Mexico. Whatever it's worth here, it's worth twice there in Mexico. Things like that can be very expensive. But on the other hand, you can't get by without it. Really, it's an important thing. Plus, they really deteriorate fast because the roads are so bad. Then also, after we finished in Chiapas, around the 1st of August, we traveled up, 8-hour drive up to the center of the country near Mexico City to meet the other team. This was a group of 18 young people from Bible Baptist in Oak Harbor. And some of them had been down 2 years ago, 2 years earlier, and many of them there were there for the first time. This church is a church that my wife and I have had a wonderful relationship. We preached in their conference last fall, and it's really a strong church. They want to serve the Lord. And we had 9 young ladies, 9 young men. And we had a wonderful time of about 10 days with them. And we went to two different churches. One was out from the city, out in the village, called Progreso. Progreso is one of the strongest churches we have in central Mexico. I would say they're running about 150 to 200 in attendance. They have a Bible Institute. They're trying to get a lot done for the Lord. And this picture you see right here, Brother Robert Sargent, their pastor, who was heading up the team, is speaking at a conference. Now, what they did was, their church building is off to our left. You can't see it. But we had so many people there, they wouldn't fit. So what they did is they put a big tent or big tarp, a huge tarp, out in the area, the parking area almost in front. They built this wall around it to protect from the wind. And that's where we're meeting. And we had several hundred people. And it was every day, going Tuesday through Friday. 4 solid days of services, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning and going to sometimes 9 and 10 o'clock at night. No joke. With about 4 or 5 hours in the afternoon, a little bit of break, but the rest of the time. In fact, we had one church service, I think it lasted 5 hours. And so if you think you've got it bad here, you have no idea. Here I am, Brother Sargent is preaching, and I'm translating for him. And you can see one of the goals that we have is to build relationships. And one thing I like about these people from Bible Baptist is they make us strong and a really deep, they have the intention of doing that. In fact, they almost go too far. Because when it comes time to leave, there's a lot of tears. There's a lot of emotions involved. Because they have made such strong friendships. And even they, I'm not talking about just our people from the States. The people from Mexico also build some really strong friendships. Remember, that's what they endure. The relationships to them are very important. And when you see things like this, and they're not as backward as you think. These young people have cell phones, and they know about Facebook and all these other things just as much as young people are here in the States. Social media and social communication via the internet is now just as common to them as it is for our young people here in the States. And here you can see that's what they're doing. That's what I think is a camera or a cell phone. I'm not sure what it is, but this is a common way of seeing it. This is one of the preachers there. I was really encouraged to see Brother Moises. I've known Brother Moises now for about 10 or 12 years. And he's been one of the students there at the Bible Institute. He's now finished. And he started a new work near the city of Puebla. He is a prison guard, not too far from where this church is at. They have a large penitentiary. And he works in that prison. And he has led to the Lord about 8 or 9 of his fellow guards. And most of them live more toward the city. So what he did about 2 years ago, he started a new mission work among them. And he brought them here, and I had the privilege of sitting down. And here again, just like Brother Francisco you saw with the Tojolovales, Brother Moises here was just as proud as a peacock because he had his little congregation. And he brought them to this conference, and they sang some specials, and he was showing them off, so to speak. And when I see that to me is the greatest thing because you're seeing multiplication through other men doing the job. And when you see them say, look, this is what God gave me. This is the congregation that God has given me. That is the most exciting thing I could have. To me, it's really, this is his wife and his 3 children. And some of the ladies, I think, slept in his home. And he's probably got the nicest home in the village. The Lord has really blessed him. And he gives all of it. He's got a nice Toyota pickup. His wife has a nice car. And they were just, they gave it to us the whole time we were there to use for carrying luggage and everything. You can imagine, we had a group of 20, plus April, myself, and Provi. That's 23. And the only vehicle I had was that Ford Explorer. And we had to move everyone else by other means. And so we were using buses. We were using Brother Moises' pickup to carry luggage and everything. But we did it. And the Lord allowed us to get it all done. And so that was a blessing. And then, you can see, this is another one of the preachers. That was one of his pickups. And that's how we got around a lot of the times. In fact, our young people loved it. In fact, there was always a fight about who was going to ride in the back of the pickup. Because that's what they wanted, because you can't do it here. So there they really enjoyed the novelty and the freedom to try that out. And so we were always, in fact, what they had is little wooden chairs in the back of that pickup, and they're all sitting there. And we could fit about 8 or 9 in the back of that pickup, and that was always a deal. Now, we didn't just go to the big churches. We also went to the small ones. For instance, on a Sunday morning, we went to this little mission that just got started. They just dedicated this building earlier this year, I think in February, and they only had 2 families. In fact, we, the visitors, were more than the church that was attending there. But We're there to encourage them. We're there to help them out. That's how things start, folks. Sometimes when you're starting, it doesn't look that nice. It doesn't look like a big group. That's why our church over here, our Spanish congregation, it doesn't look like much even right now. But that's how you begin. And so we were there to help them out and to give them encouragement. Brother Sergeant preached to them that morning, and it was a blessing to see them there. There's another thing that I do when I'm working and taking groups down like this. And that is to show them what really idolatry is like. A lot of people have no concept what truly it is like in other countries. Those of you who've been to Thailand know what I'm talking about as you visit the Buddhist temples, other places. But what you don't realize is throughout Latin America, Catholicism is also very idolatrous. And one of the things we do is we show them, this is a procession outside of our hotel in Mexico City. We spent 2 days of being tourists, so to speak. And I take them around to see some sights. But one of the things I wanted to show them was what happens in the main Basilica of Guadalupe there. Now, this was not at the Basilica. This was just on the street. And this is a very common thing. You see about several hundred people. They're carrying there an image of the Virgin of Guadalupe. And you'll see this around here a lot. Anywhere where you see a lot of Mexican citizens, they usually will have an image in their restaurant or something like this. Because this is what they worship. She's in a frame over here, and you might barely see it right there. That's the image. You can see it right there. And then the frame of flowers and stuff like that. And she's on the soldiers of about 10 or 12 people. And they're carrying, it's kind of like a float. And they've got candles, and they've got flags, they've got a band playing music and all this. And it's a procession and blocks the street for a while. And that's very common. You see that all throughout Mexico. But then you go to the main cathedral, where you see the original of this image, where everyone comes to worship it. And what you see there is the people in all types of penitence. This is a man who's crawling on his knees because he has a special favor to ask of the Virgin. If you talk to these people, especially at this place where we're at right now, this is called the Basilica. It's the main Catholic building for practically the whole country. She's called the Queen of the Americas. She is looked at as the most venerated. She is more important than Christ. In fact, if you ask them, who do you pray to, Christ or Mary? Everyone says, oh, to Mary. To them, who's more important to you? Oh, Mary is more important than Christ. And that is in their mind. And that's where they think that they will get any favor, any help that they need. They'll do this. In fact, you can see a man here. He's got a baby in his arms. And he's been crawling already for quite a while. And he's in such pain that all he could do was move a few, I don't know what you would call it, knee moves, I guess you'd call it, because I wouldn't call them footsteps. But he moves forward maybe about 6 inches to a foot, and the pain is so great that he has to stop and continue. And the baby in his arms, apparently what he was doing was asking something. I don't know if the baby was sick or what was going on, but he has to go several hundred yards like this on stones that are pretty rough to get to the entrance to that church, because that's what he was trying to do, was ask for a special favor. And anytime you go to this place, you see people do this all the time. And one of the things that I've realized is when I take people to see this, they really finally begin to see what idolatry truly is like. It's hard for you to imagine. What you see, the Catholicism that you see here in the United States is not the same Catholicism that you see in Mexico or that you'll see in Europe or you'll see in other places. Catholicism is a chameleon. It adapts itself to whatever country it's at. We call it syncretism. There's a special theological term for it. And what it means is, it takes whatever customs are there, whatever idolatrous customs already exist, and gives it Christian terms, but still continues doing the same thing. That's why you'll find among these countries, and you'll go to this place, and there'll be an image of the Virgin Mary, and they've got all the things in front of it, like candles and flowers, and they got a glass to protect it. And you watch, we took pictures of this. We saw a woman doing this. She walked up to the glass, wiped the glass, and then wiped her hand over a portion of her child, over her face or back or neck, asking for healing. And you do that all the time. And so this type of thing is hard for us to understand when we see what idolatry truly is like. They think that these images, that these things, that they will pray to them, that it will answer their prayers. They have no really concept of what worshiping a true God. And then when you tell them, well, Scripture prohibits idolatry, it just It doesn't even make it right because it is so ingrained in their thought and everything they do. So this is something that really I take the group. I usually do it toward the end so that they can really get an understanding of what's going on. And it really makes us pray and understand that why we need to take the gospel to the world. That's it for the presentation. If y'all could turn on the lights, I would appreciate it. I want to give a chance to April and my wife to say a few words. But before I do that, I know there's some questions. And there's one young man here that's got a question. What's your question? They would probably kill you. You have to. It's the same thing if someone came into our church building and tried to do something to us. How we would feel about that. When I'm in those kind of places, even though I don't agree with it and I don't like what I'm seeing, I have to respect them if I expect them to respect me also. So I don't try to create a ruckus. I don't try to create. Now, we had tracks with us, and we were doing all those kind of things. And a lot of the times, we're passing out tracks. But I said, when you come to a place like this, this is not the place to do it. Because you're going to get a reaction that's not right. Now, there's been some instances in the past when my father was doing a lot better, when he was able to do more. In fact, when I was younger, when the Pope would visit Mexico. That's a different story. When the Pope would visit Mexico, with all the crowds, yes, we printed special tracks. And we went out into the crowds and we passed out tracts. In fact, we printed tracts with an image of the very Pope on it, but it would explain what the problem was inside. Well, we had some nuns that thought it was something good, so they grabbed it from us and started passing out for us. But we do try to be careful, especially in certain places. This to them is their most holy site, so to speak. It would like you go into a Muslim place and also try to do that. They would consider that you're desecrating it. And that's not correct. And it would be the same thing if someone come into our church service while we're trying to have a church service and they try to interrupt to do something like that. That would not be right. So we don't want to do that. Any other questions? All right. April, it's your turn. She doesn't want to come up here. But I made her do it and translate it for Spanish, I believe. So it was her turn.
Well, first off, I'd like to say thank you to all those who prayed for us while we were gone. I was gone for a month. Bruce was gone a lot longer. But we can tell that everybody was praying for us. You can feel it. I'd like to especially thank you for praying for their ministry. They really do have an overwhelming ministry. There is so much involved in that. I didn't know what to expect when I first went there. I'd been in Thailand a few years, and the ministry over there is in publishing and typesetting. His ministry, or the Bruce's ministry, is a lot of preaching and teaching and working directly with the people. So there's two different aspects. And it was such a blessing for me to get to see that aspect of it. The days were very long and exhausting because you'd sit on those wooden benches for hours and hours and hours at a time. I think one service was about 5.5 hours long. And I just had to get up. Like, I couldn't sit any longer. But we had a really good time. You'll have to ask Provy about getting stuck in a cactus. The shrimp soup, I was the one that thought it was peppercorns. They don't have black pepper over there. Or if they do, it's very rare. And I love black pepper. So I was so excited. I thought, oh, it's peppercorn. And then I looked closer and thought, no, we had a little shrimp swimming in there. So, but I'm thankful we didn't have to eat it because it was pretty bad. But all in all, though, we had a very, very good trip. There are lots and lots of villages. I did not realize, just in the state of Chiapas alone, that there are over, what would you say, 200? churches. That's a lot. In a lot of these villages, we'd go to one day and then we'd go to another one the next day. Some of the same people from the previous day would follow us and go the next day, and they would just keep following. So you'd have quite a few people at each service. And you saw the pictures. The churches are not like ours. We don't have padded seats. They don't have carpet. They don't have air conditioner. And sometimes it'd start raining, and it'd be raining so hard you'd have to pause the service because you couldn't even hear. And then they just pick up and keep going where they left off. So it's very different. But these people from these villages, they will do sometimes whatever it takes to get there. And they'll walk forever. A lot of them don't have cars. But they're just so hungry for the word of the Lord and just to know more about the Lord that they're willing to sacrifice quite a lot. We went to, it wasn't a funeral. What did we go to? Like a wake? We went to a wake. One of the first four men that were saved under Brother Milton Martin's ministry was Brother Carlos Mendoza, and his sister passed away while we were there. We were able to go to her wake, and I was able to meet him, and that was such a blessing to see the fruit of Brother Milton's ministry years ago, and now where it's at now. And all these men that Brother Milton saw saved are now reaching their people, and the group that you saw, the Tejolo Bales, did I say that right? They had not been reached ever before, and it's a brand new group, and getting to sit there and see the testimony of the guy that reached them and knowing they're going into a whole new tribe and a whole new group was just absolutely incredible. I enjoyed every minute of it. The trip was hard. It was exhausting, but it was such a blessing to come away and just see the things that the Lord has done. I know that Provy and I, we spent a lot of time in prayer together, and before we left for this trip, we were praying about some goals for ourselves that we wanted to see. And one of the goals that, and this may sound so cliche, but it's something I think each one of us probably struggle with, was one of the goals that I had made was I wanted to learn to see people as the Lord saw them. And not as people I know or people I don't know or just people I see on the street, but really and truly see them as He sees them, which are either lost or saved, and no matter what, He still loves them. And that's such a hard concept sometimes because we come with prejudgments a lot. I know I do, but I'm going to tell a story on Bruce and I can get in trouble later. But one of the services that we were at, it was in the village of Yochib in Brother Esteban's church, and it happened to be the time when the new village had been reached with the gospel, a couple of the people. And the service was very long. It was very, very good. They had a lot of specials, several testimonies. And I was struggling with really, truly understanding, do I really see people the way the Lord sees them? Do I really have a love for them like I should all the time? And at one point, Brother Bruce had gotten up, and he's a very godly man, by the way, a very strong Christian man. And when he got up, he just lost it. He just started crying. I'm sorry, Brother Bruce, but he did. And it was then that I realized that is what when you truly see somebody the way God sees them, you put aside all doubt, and he started crying for them. He was so, I guess he was just so excited to see what the Lord was doing and just so touched. He had a love for these people. He's not just there because God called him, and he is. That is part of the reason why he's there, but he loves those people more than anything. He and Provy and Andrew and David, they all do. And for me to see that, I think I finally realized it's not just loving people. It's more than that. You have to sacrifice your entire self for them. And Brother Bruce and Brother Milton, they have. You know, Brother Milton went first, and just by that one man, the seeds that he planted, and then Brother Bruce following along, there are hundreds, if not thousands, all over the entire country of Mexico. Everywhere we went, the people were so grateful. It was not unusual to see a little Bruce or a little Milton running around. You know, they've named somebody after them. So overall, it was a wonderful trip. I do thank you for your prayers and your notes and everything that you sent. I was only gone a month, but I really missed you guys, missed y'all a lot. But I'm so thankful to be back, and I do look forward, you know, maybe the Lord would send me again and get me to allow me to see some different things, some different perspectives. So thank you. And thank you, Bruce and Provy, for letting me come and stay with y'all.
Provy, your turn.
I'm going to echo what Bruce and what April have said, and I just want to say thank you. We could not be on the mission field without your prayer and without your support, and I'm just so thankful for Brother CR. I still owe him a pecan pie, so because, you know, without a good vehicle to run around with, you're by the side of the road very, very much. And when we landed in Mexico City, we had a good trip there, and then we started with Mission Class 101, things do not turn out the way you think they're going to turn out. We had gotten to Mexico City. We got off our American Airlines flight. We were getting on our Adio Mexico flight, and we get to the counter, and the lady says, oh, you got here too late. We have sold your seats. You do not have a ticket to Tuxtla Gutierrez, and it's your fault, so sorry. That's all we have to say. Go talk to American. It's their problem. So John and April and I, we carted our luggage back and forth and back and forth after we found our luggage. And finally at 9:30 they said, well, you're not getting out of here tonight. We're going to give you a hotel. So we slept 3 hours, and then we landed in Tuxtla Gutierrez in the and we went to the little apartment, and like I said, John only stayed a week. You missed all the fun, John. You missed all the fun, because after he left, we tiptoed to the latrine, and we had like the shrimp soup and the other things like that. But it was wonderful to see the love of the brethren, how they shared with us. It was wonderful to see how John and April and the teams from Oak Harbor. It was just wonderful. John had everything in his bag. He gets an A+ from us, Renee. He had Band-Aids. We were even rummaging through the shaving kit he left after he was gone, because he had everything in there that we needed. So thank you, John. We appreciate that very much. And I guess thanks to Miss Doris Davison. I'm sure she was the one behind him getting all that stuff between him and Renee, between her and Renee. But I think the highlight of our service was seeing the soul saved. I know that Bruce always preaches that the greatest miracle is when God takes a heart and he changes it, because he's the only way, only one that he can do that. And then the other highlight of our trip was being with the brethren. I know that some of the brethren there in Mexico, I'm closer to them than to some of my blood relatives. And it's so wonderful to know that we have that bond in the Lord. And I'd like for you to turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. I'm going to share two verses with you. And it's 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. And this verse just emphasizes the power of your prayers. And I know that sometimes the devil sits on our shoulder and he starts whispering to us and saying that, you know, we're not worth anything, but the Lord doesn't see us that way, and our prayers are so powerful. But here in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14, the Lord says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves. The first thing that we need in our lives is humility. And then we need to pray. We need to seek him and turn from our wicked ways. And God says that he will hear from heaven, he will forgive our sin, and he will heal our land. And I also want you to look at Hosea, chapter 10 and verse 12. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. And the book that April and I were studying was the book Seeking Him by Nancy Lee DeMoss. And it was a blessing. We started that at the beginning of the trip. And then as it got busier and busier, we weren't able to finish. But we did start studying that book by Nancy Lee DeMoss. And it was a great blessing to us. And in Hosea chapter 10, verse 12, it says, sow to yourselves in righteousness and reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till he come and rain righteousness upon him. And if we see a farmer, he never goes out and sows his seed without plowing the ground first. And God will not sow his seed of blessing if we have an unrepentant heart. So one of the things that God was challenging me with is, Provi, you need to break up the fallow ground in your heart. You need to make sure that there's repentance in your heart, that you're open to the Lord, that you're seeking him. And when you are repentant and when you have your ground all broken up, then the Lord can sow seeds that will take root in your heart. And I just thank you for your prayers. I just thank each and every one of you. I thank you for the ladies and for all that you mean to us, because for the guys, it's a lot different than it is for us. On the trip, we would talk about the blue channel and the pink channel, because they look at things a lot differently than we do. And I just want to thank you for all that you have done for us. We greatly appreciate it. The Lord bless you.
Well, we've taken a lot more longer than I expected us to. On these reports, it usually works out that way, but I think it's still worth it. One of the things that I brought out to the young people as they were ready to leave, one of my goals that I have And my ministry and the men that I work with, the people I teach, and those of you know that I love to teach. The Lord has given me that gift, and it seems like as I get older and older, the more and more I'm involved in teaching and preparing people for ministry. But the one thing that I also am always searching for and asking God is that if I'm teaching, it's just that I don't want you to have knowledge about God. I want you to know God through experiencing Him. I want you to know God because of what He's done in your life. One of the reasons that we have a lot of our younger generations that are coming along in our independent fundamental churches that are not being faithful, that are falling by the wayside, is because they don't know God through experiencing what He can do in their life. They just study about it. And Scripture tells us about, I know that Bruce Wilkerson has several books on this about it, but if we go to the book of Joshua, in chapter 24, it brings this out here, and it shows us why the problem for almost 400 years after Joshua with the judges, where everyone did what was right in their own eyes, and it gives us a key of why that occurred. And it talks about how they were very faithful, how that they knew what God was doing, and saw God's power and what He had done in their lives. I'm sorry. I thought I had it here, and I'm looking now for the verse. Verse 31. I'm sorry here. Joshua chapter 24 and verse 31. This is right after Joshua had died. It says, "And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua." And here's the key. "And which had known all the works of the Lord that He had done for Israel." They had seen the miracles. They saw Jericho, the walls, fall down. They saw how Jordan was stopped up. They knew what God could do. To them, those miracles were real. It wasn't something they had heard about. Now, if we go over to Judges chapter 2, it repeats the very same thing. Judges chapter 2 and verse 7. Judges chapter 2 and verse 7 says, "And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that He did for Israel." It's a word for word repeat of Joshua chapter 24. But now let's go to verse 10. Verse 10. "And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there rose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which He had done for Israel." And that became the downfall of the nation. One generation was seeing what God had done, but the next generation did not have those experiences. We are presenting to you tonight some experiences that we've had, and we thank the Lord for it. I thank the Lord that He's given me the opportunity to have many experiences. And I believe that that's the reason the Lord has allowed me to do what I do, is because of that. But it should not just be for us. It should be for every one of us. And I'm not just talking about mission trips. I'm talking about your relationship with God. What miracles has God done in your life? What things has God done that is His mighty works in your life? It should not be something you read about others. You should not be thinking, "Oh, that's just the great spiritual ones. That's just for the missionaries or the pastor." No, it should be for every Christian. And when you don't have those experiences, you're not going to be grounded and really have a relationship with God like you should. You're not going to know why God really is. You've got to see His mighty hand. And I want you to think about in your own life, what has God done in my life? If He hasn't, if it's hard for you to think about that, you need to ask yourself why. And when was the last time that God did do it? It's not even a question of has He done it. It should have been for all of us. If we're God's children, He's already done it. But the question is, how long has it been? And if it's been a long time, then there's we're going to ask ourselves, well, why is that? I don't think it's God's fault. Here, it wasn't God's fault in the book of Judges. It was their fault. One of the things that I can see why God has allowed me to be His servant is because my father taught me very early on, you need to have your own experiences. He had his, but he says, you need to have your own. And my goal in my own family, my own children, is they have theirs also. It's not just something I say, well, this is what happened. You know, as we get older, we like to do that, don't we? Well, when I was young, and we like to recount our experiences. And we like to think our children will learn from our experiences. They really don't. We can tell them. We can try to help them out. But really, they have to have their own experiences. And God wants the same thing for every one of His children. He wants you to have the experience of God working in your life. If that hasn't happened, you need to ask yourself why. And look for it. Beg for it. Ask God, what do I need to do so that you can do something in my life where I can see your mighty works, so I can experience your power in my own life. Father, I pray even now that you would touch our hearts with this. We've had a little bit of experience of seeing on the slides and other ways and recounting our experiences. But my desire, my prayer, is that every member of Metropolitan knows the power of God through their life. They can see what He can do. And that as that is happening, as that is going on, they can become stronger. They can be used. And we can see that this church will have a mighty impact upon many here on this earth. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We have a verse of invitation, Brother John.
Page 155.
Maybe you need to ask the Lord for something this evening. Maybe God has something He wants you to say, I want more experiences from you. And that might be something that God is touching your heart with. If that is, the altar is open. Come forward on this very first verse.
Have thy